Well, we're continuing on our journey through wisdom literature. And of course, as you know, we have already taken a look at some passages from the book of Proverbs, the oldest book of wisdom literature. And then we've gone to the second book, Ecclesiastes, right? Koheleth, right? Vanity of vanities. For every season there is, you know, a particular time and place under heaven, the various quotes that were familiar with. And now we're going to the third oldest book in the wisdom literature, the book of Job, leaving us with two more to go after this, Sirach, and of course a very recent book of wisdom right before the time of Jesus. And in this book, the book of Job, as all of you know, this really concerns the first systematic attempt to talk about a theology of suffering. And it's in the Old Testament, but Jesus, as we'll see in a moment, has really updated this, has really transformed the view of suffering, and that's going to be transformed even more by the Christian church after Jesus. So what we see, though, is a very early attempt, a very interesting attempt to explain this. And what's the thesis that lies behind the book of Job? What is the question that the author is trying to answer? The question is, why would God allow a just person like Job to suffer? What's the context? In the Old Testament, the context is very clear from Exodus, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy. And that is, sinners are going to get retribution. They deserve suffering. So what's happened, right, this idea that you could explain, you know, all of suffering through the sin of Adam, that's not quite the whole deal, because Moses comes along and he says, basically, if you adhere to the law, God's going to grace you. He's going to give you good things in this life if you are a righteous and just person. However, a sinner gets retribution down to the fourth generation. Children, children's children, children's children, children, down to the fourth generation. So the book of Job, then, is trying, in light of what Moses has promised, is trying to answer the question, here's Job. He's a just man. Why in the world is he suffering? And of course, Satan in this period is not considered to be a purely malevolent spirit. That does occur for sure with Jesus. Jesus, of course, and prior to Jesus too, you do have the sense of the Satan being a purely malevolent spirit, probably going back to the second century BC. But at the time of Job, Job's like a counselor, and he's part of, you know, seemingly a whole heavenly court that's up there, and they're kind of judging humanity, and Job is kind of what you might call the devil's advocate, right? He is the one that comes up and says, let's not judge Job just too fast here. I mean, you gave him a lot of stuff, and that's why he's a just man. If you hadn't given him all that stuff, and I get to take it away from him, why, Job will blaspheme you to your face. So, of course, God says, well, you know, I got to listen to my counselor. Let's test him out, you know. And, of course, God is kind of, you know, in this sort of courtroom deal. Now, of course, Jesus doesn't view God this way, but this is very, very typical of something written, right, 6th, 7th century B.C. And Job has two major authors, the book of Job, right? You have a very early author that we're reading about now, and then there's another author that starts with the Elihu dialogues that comes a little later. But the main thing to remember with Job is that the explanation, right, tons of explanations are going to be given in this really ingenious early attempt to figure out the suffering of the just man. And in the end, right, after the devil has done all these things, and Job, let's face it, he does kind of have these moments where he says, well, an injustice has been done to me, but I accept it. Elihu has to correct him and say, hey, you better not call God unjust. What God does is wise, right? So there's this idea at the end, you know, where Job just says, okay, well, what's the only thing I can do with respect to the suffer, my own suffering? I don't understand it. I'll never understand it. I just have to accept that God is wise, that God is just. I shouldn't challenge this. I know this to be true. And of course, accepting this, I just accept my suffering, and that's the end of it. That's basically what we get to in the book of Job. Just humbly accept your suffering, trusting, believing in the wisdom and justice of God, and trying not to ask that question, why, because I seem to be a just person, living a good life, why should I get suffering in my life? Just don't ask it. Be humble and accept God's, you know, will for you as wise and just. You'll figure it out at some other time. Now, of course, Jesus comes on the scene, and I don't have the time to explain everything right now, but he's going to change everything in four ways. Number one, Jesus is going to have a definitive notion of the resurrection. Remember, in the book of Job, resurrection is vague at best in this development. In this, right, you're dealing with the 6th century B.C., right? 7th century, maybe even B.C. You're dealing with a very vague notion of the resurrection at best. Yes, the notion of the resurrection increases by the time we get to the prophets, the later prophets, and by the time we get to the book of wisdom. That is true. But up at the point of Job here, it's not clear. Second, but Jesus, of course, is saying this is a definitive truth. Paul says Jesus' resurrection is the central truth of Christianity because it's our resurrection, and all suffering, here's the point, must be interpreted in light of the resurrection we are going to inherit, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. God will redeem all suffering in the resurrection, and suffering, here's the second point, says Jesus and Paul. And second point is that suffering has a very important purpose in leading us to salvation, leading us to the resurrection, because it detaches us from ourselves, detaches us from superficiality, gives us the humility that we need to accept God and make him more important in our lives, gives us the humility to clean up our act, as it were, gives us the compassion and the empathy to sympathize with other people, as Jesus has taught us to do in agape. Suffering is really an important thing for the path to salvation and getting us to the ultimate point at which we use our freedom correctly to choose the Lord. The third thing that Jesus says, it's not just the fact that suffering can help us toward our salvation, but our suffering and the suffering of others can be the occasion for us to help others toward their salvation. So that's the third major point. And the fourth major point is that we can use our suffering in imitation of the cross of Jesus to offer it up, as St. Therese of Lisieux, for example, would offer her whole life of suffering, not as something which is ignominious and meaningless, right, but as something which can be given in self-sacrifice, as Jesus did, a self-sacrificial gift which is given to God, so that God can take that love, right? Self-sacrificial gift given to God equals love. He can take the love that we offer to him and shower it down upon all who need it as the ultimate purpose of our lives. We are the grace producers through our suffering, the grace producers, the love producers through our suffering, which of course God showers upon people. And that is extraordinarily meaningful. So Jesus completely updates the whole theology of suffering. And there's much more to say about these things, right, in light of natural science and so forth and so on and scientific laws. But that's the basic thing. Jesus cancels the idea of retribution for suffering, but God's not a retributive God. And he replaces it with these four purposes of suffering. And of course, now suffering is seen in light of eternity and in light of the unconditionally loving God and the unconditional love that we are moving to in our own freedom, for which suffering is an invaluable help and which can be offered up to others. It's beautiful. Job sets the stage. It's only the beginning. And Jesus completes it in the fulfillment of Revelation. Amen.